Welcome, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station this afternoon. My name is Andy Jones, and I'm the host of this radio show every Wednesday afternoon for the last 9 years or so. I've introduced you all to poets and pundits, technologists, and recently, actors, playwrights, directors. That will be the case this afternoon, for I have some representatives here of an upcoming production of Chekhov's The Seagull, which is due to open, I believe, a week from tonight, the 10th of March, and it runs through until the 14th. That's the Sunday 2 p.m. show. You've got a great opportunity to see a world-famous director and also an impressive cast on stage here in the city of Davis. I'm going to give you some details about that for the first half hour. And then in the second half of the show, we will be joined by a few other folks, including Robin Rahm. She's the author of two acclaimed books and a chapbook, as well as a memoir that was named a top 10 nonfiction book of the year by Entertainment Weekly. Robin Rahm, who's been active in recent years, with some of our undergraduates and graduate students at the Tomales Bay workshop. She's going to be joining us by phone at about 5:30 to discuss her most recent publications. And then, in the last 10 minutes of the show, we will be joined by Elizabeth Andelong and by one of my students, full disclosure, Leo Cristobal. They are taking part in a series of plays that's going to happen tomorrow evening called America is on the Stage. And this is from FILA, Filipinos in Liberal Arts and Humanities. So stick around. A lot of theater, a lot of writing, a lot of creativity, a lot of everything that you turn to KDVS for on a Wednesday afternoon. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with more of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis. Quick reminder that the first Monday of every month is Poetry Night here in the city of Davis. Tonight is no exception. John Bowe, the award-winning teacher, essayist, stand-up comedian, jazz musician, and storyteller, will be performing this evening at 8 o'clock at Bistro 33. John Bowe is famous not only for his classes on fairy tales and folklore, on Shakespeare, and all the writing classes that he's been teaching for more than 30 years for the University Writing Program here at UC Davis, but also for the raunchy, off-color, shocking stories that he tells when he comes to Poetry Night at Bistro 33. This will be his third appearance. So if you're interested, you're certainly invited, though you're also invited to leave the children at home. The start time is 8 o'clock for John Bowe. My first guest this afternoon is Katya Kamotskaya. I got that right? I'm getting a thumbs up. Katya Kamotskaya has been acting and teaching internationally for the last 25 years. She started her professional training in the Youth Theater Studio, led by leading actor-director Oleg Tabakov, now artistic director of the Moscow Art Theater. From there, she won a place in Vakhtangov's school, now called Shukin's College. During her training, she took part in the Grotowski Theater Laboratory workshop entitled The Tree of People. Herein began her own unique combining of Stanislavski and Grotowski. Her bio goes on for another four or five paragraphs, but mostly I wanted to tell you that she's our Granada artist-in-residence at UC Davis, and she's directing a production of Anton Chekhov's The Seagull, a play about faith and love in theater and life and in yourself. It's a play that begins a week from tonight, and she's joined here by Mark Stevenson, her assistant director, and one of our old friends, Bella Merlin, who, Bella, you're a member of the cast, yes?
Indeed. Yes.
Excellent. So welcome to all three of you, and welcome especially to Katya Kamotskaya. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. So tell me about what attracted you first to the opportunity to come to UC Davis and to be our Granada artist in residence.
Well, first of all, Chekhov is always tempting, never mind how many times I kind of were involved in different sort of works with Chekhov. And secondly, to have an opportunity to work for the first time with not students of mine, it's challenging, scary, some of them probably more than 50% professionals, so it kind of takes production to a different level.
Right.
And also, I'm afraid that I can't say no when somebody asks me to do Chekhov.
Excellent. Wonderful. Well, for folks listening at home who would not know Chekhov so well, why is he so important? Why is he so important to you?
Well, kind of in more general way, he was the first one who started to write plays which is not about obvious story, but about journey of the human beings. It's kind of psychologically based, if you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to, it's about how people communicate or not communicate and how they, kind of survive in this life. So it's not about what happened. It's about how it happens, how they fall in love, how they break their hearts. And this is, I think, it's always contemporary. It would never be old-fashioned.
Yeah. And I think some people say that one reason that's true is that Chekhov is careful not to impose a moral message upon his plays, and so that a great number of messages of discoveries can be made, and that therefore the plays have a certain timeless feeling to them.
Mm-hmm. But also what he gives you huge amount of choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say every time I do it with different people, it will be different play, and it's that's why it's never boring. You never can say everything about the play. Always gives you more and more and more.
Excellent. The Seagull is the play, and it's the first of, is it four plays that are considered Chekhov's most important? I don't know.
Five.
Tell us a little bit about the Seagull. What would attract people who might not have seen a Chekhov play to this one in particular when it opens a week from tonight?
Well, first of all, it's about all kinds of all kinds and different versions of love, and love is eternal.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I don't think that anybody can be indefinite about it. And also, I don't know, it's about theater and actors and writers and their difficulties in creativity, which also I think is quite attractive. I don't know if I make any sense.
Oh, yeah, that makes total sense, absolutely. Well, let me reintroduce listeners at home to the other folks who are here. And Bella Merlin is one of the old friends of this program, even though she's only been on campus for a couple years. She's been on this radio show a few times. And we were just talking about the importance of actors. I came across a photograph of Chekhov reading The Seagull to a number of the actors that he would work with. And either sitting next to him or maybe standing over his shoulder was Stanislavski. And I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about Stanislavski and your impression and anticipation of taking part in this production.
Well, Stanislavski's acting system, if you like, mm-hmm. which is what we would now associate with most of the film actors that we're familiar with in different manifestations through the American method, etc. He kind of found his system by working with Chekhov's texts. Chekhov was doing something so new and unusual in putting the kind of psychology of people in front of conventional storytelling devices that it needed a new style of acting. And I have a little theory, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, that if Stanislavski and Chekhov hadn't met each other at the point at which they did, I'm not sure either of them would have become as famous as they did. It was kind of the magic chemistry between the two of them, even though on the surface it looked like they didn't really understand each other very much, that's made both of them such kind of pillars of contemporary acting practice and theatre practice.
Perhaps also if they hadn't met, many of us would have been exposed to many more decades of bad acting all through the 20th century.
Yes. I can't say it's been completely eradicated. But
right.
Yes.
Absolutely. But we had some guidance. Not everyone was
absolutely
willing to take it.
Yeah, yeah. And I've known Katya for some time. She was my teacher, my own acting teacher out mm-hmm. in Russia. And I was just thrilled at the possibility of her coming to work with our actors. And we've got undergrads, grads, faculty, all involved in this production. It's really terrific. And it's been our work together on Stanislavski over the years that's also kind of brought us together on this particular Chekhov project. So it's great all round.
Tell us a little bit, Bella Merlin, about your role and your preparation and thoughts about your role in The Seagull.
I play the role of Arkadina, who is a 44-year-old actress, so it seemed appropriate that I should play it. And it's at a time when an old style of acting is going out of fashion, and a new style, one that we probably associate with American method, the Stanislavski system, is coming in. And yeah, she's beginning to feel that she's getting on a bit, and new young talent is coming up and pushing her off the romantic field as well as the theatrical field. And so, obviously, the research wasn't that extensive
because
it's all close to home.
So, in the writing world, we're sometimes told to write what we know. But you are acting what you know to a certain extent.
Yes.
Yeah.
That said, it's a very, very challenging part. I'd like to think she's much more of a prima donna than I am. So I've had to find that ability to just sort of, you can't be humble playing Arkadina. Yeah.
So when your students see you on stage, they'll see that you really are acting. They're used to your humility, your down-to-earth connection with your students. And up there, you'll be someone totally different.
Yes, it's such a wonderful thing that happens here at UC Davis, that faculty and students can work together in a forum like this. And it happens with the design faculty, choreographers, playwrights, directors, etc. So it's terrific that, and it was one of the things that drew me to the job, was when I discovered that there was this sort of open audition system whereby faculty. Andy, I'm yearning for the day when you're in a production.
You'd
have been marvelous in Chekhov, I have to say.
I've been tempted. I have a few other side projects that I'm working on. Nevertheless, someday I'm sure it will happen. Excellent. And certainly a great learning opportunity, just as you've worked with Katya, a great learning opportunity for your students to work with you on stage, learn from you as a guide, and also as a peer up on stage.
I think it's also important that they see that we never know it all, and that I'm learning from my teacher in front of them. And, with something like acting, because your instrument is constantly changing, you're constantly learning and constantly re-engaging with the instrument that is you, your imagination, your body, your experiential landscape. So it's good to be vulnerable in front of the students, I think.
Absolutely. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, and we're talking about an upcoming production of Chekhov's The Seagull. It opens a week from tonight on March 10th. So if you're looking for another opportunity to be intrigued and interested and amazed by a local theatrical production, this would be a great opportunity. The show runs through the weekend. There are shows Friday and Saturday night, and then a matinee on Sunday. We're going to take a quick musical break, and when we return, I will reintroduce you all to Mark Stevenson, the assistant director of this upcoming production of The Seagull. This is KDBS. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
There are many ways to measure success. For the Shriners, it's the nearly 700,000 children with orthopedic and burn problems that they've helped. This is Ricardo Montalban. For over 80 years, the Shriners have provided state-of-the-art medical care to kids all over North America, totally free of charge. There is a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child that the Shriners might be able to help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. If you're looking for something to do tonight, I'll let you know where I'm going to be. I'm going to be at Poetry Night at Bistro 33, seeing John Bow tell naughty stories. Perhaps I'll see you there. We're talking about an upcoming production of The Seagull, one of Chekhov's most famous plays. It starts a week from tonight, March 10th. And one of the assistant directors for this production is Mark Stevenson. He's here in the studio. I wanted to make sure to introduce him to all of you. Mark Stevenson, welcome to the radio show.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you to this production of The Seagull.
Okay. I'm actually I'm a trained actor. I was actually one of Katya, the director's students, when she first started working full-time in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So I trained under her at the Royal Scottish Academy in Glasgow. And we've currently been co-directing projects for the last 6 months. So when Katya was invited out here by Bella, she invited me to tag along, and obviously I jumped at the opportunity to come out to California and get involved in the work here.
Sure. So tell us your perspective on the UC Davis experience working with our students, graduate students, fellow faculty here at UC Davis.
Yeah. It's been really wonderful. We felt very unsupported on projects we've worked on in the past,
mm-hmm.
and it's just great that the creative team here are so passionate and just jump in and run with every challenge that we throw at them. Katya's work, as she's already said, it changes project by project. So depending on the actors that we're working with here, the performance, the production will change, and ideas are constantly evolving, constantly happening, which is a nightmare for the designers or the prop room, and we'll say, oh, actually we need something here, or we need another chair there, or then they just dive in. They're great.
Right.
Costume department is fantastic. Designers, the lighting and sound, just all been brilliant. In terms of the actors, again, it's as Bella was saying, it's great because you've got so many different people, different experiences. Those with training, those at the sort of at the beginning of their training. I think there's a real challenge with Chekhov, with the sort of Californian soul. But the Californian soul is quite laid back.
Right.
It's quite cool. Nothing too ruffled on the surface. And I think with this play, with Chekhov in general, it's got a really deep passion and a real intensity that we need to bring out. So we're sort of pushing the actors to get those results.
And occasionally a kind of subtext of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably you really have to work to get your Californian students to tap into, find it even.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, everyone has it, but it's right. Just how deep you have to trawl to bring it out.
You might ask them to think about their GPAs.
And, GPA and, is?
Yeah, grade point average. Students here at UC Davis are very concerned about grades.
Okay.
So if you can just whisper that into their ears.
You're going to get an E.
Right. That will cause some confusion as well, which, maybe also
do. Okay.
Yeah. So, excellent. Well, so Mark, welcome to Davis. Is this your first time to California?
I came as a kid and did a coach tour with my family, but this is my first time as a working adult.
Excellent. Well, from one adult to another, welcome to Davis. I hope that it's a fruitful experience for you. If you are just joining us, we're talking about a production of The Seagull, which opens on March 10th and runs through to that following weekend. I've got the exact dates here, so if you need them, I'll tell you. It starts on the 10th and goes until the 13th, showtimes at 8 p.m., and also a matinee on Sunday the 14th at 2 p.m. I hope to enjoy the show a week from tonight. I'll be flying off to Japan on that Sunday, uh-huh. So I'll have to miss the matinee. Doesn't that sound enticing? Any of you want to hear the story about that are welcome to stop me at Poetry Night at Bistro 33 this evening. Katya Komatskaya is here, and she is our Granada artist in residence. She will be the director of this production of The Seagull, and she's also a teacher of both acting and either directly or indirectly directing of the two guests that sit on her either side, and they are Bella Merlin and also Mark Stevenson. I think that everyone at home would love to hear some actual Russian, which we hear too infrequently on this program, Katya. So I'm wondering if you happen to know a poem in Russian, as so many Russian citizens do, that you could share with listeners of this radio show?
Yes, I do. I do have one.
Excellent. Who is the poet and what is the poem?
It's the poet of the beginning of the 20th century, Marina Tsvetaeva, the most fruitful period in Russian poetry. And there is no title for this poem. It's about life, love, and death.
Excellent. Let's hear it.
Уж сколько их упало в эту бездну, разверстую вдали. Настанет день, когда и я исчезну с поверхности земли. Состынет все, что пело и боролось, сияло и рвалось. И зелень глаз моих, и нежный голос, и золото волос, и будет жизнь с ее насущным хлебом, забывчивостью дня. И будет все, как будто бы на свете и не было меня. Изменчивый, как дети в каждой мине, и так недолго злой, любивший час, когда дрова в камине становятся золой, виолончели, кавалькады в чаще, и колокол в селе. Меня, такой живой и настоящий, на ласковой земле. К вам всем, что мне, ни в чем не знавшей меры, чужие и свои, я обращаюсь с требованием веры и с просьбой о любви. И день, и ночь, и письменно, и устно, за правду да и нет, за то, что мне так часто слишком грустно, и только 20 лет, за быстроту стремительных событий, за правду, за игру. Послушайте, еще меня любите, за то, что я умру.
Wonderful. So that was our Granada artist in residence. Her name is Katya Komotskaya, and she will be directing a production of The Seagull. It begins on March 10th and runs through that following weekend. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Perhaps you are as well. If you want to find out more about the players who have joined me in this on-air production this afternoon, then point your browser at theateranddance.ucdavis.edu, and you can also Google The Seagull while you're there and find out more about this particular production. So, Katya, thank you very much for sharing that with us. That was beautiful.
Thank you for inviting me here.
Absolutely. If we had more time, we would do only Russian poetry for the rest of the show, because I'm sure that's what people at home are going to be wishing for more of. You all can listen to that again on the website at kdvs.org. Mark Stevenson, thanks very much for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Hope you enjoy your stay in California.
Thank you.
And Bella Merlin, great to see you again, and I'm looking forward to seeing you on stage.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure as ever.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around, because in just a moment, I'm going to be phoning Robin Rahm, the novelist and poet and memoirist, who's going to be joining me for the next segment of everybody's favorite poetry and technology program. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019 or via email at root@lugod.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS. This is Jack McDuff's tune called Hunk O' Fun. It's from a CD called Blue Note Rare Grooves. Hope you're enjoying it. As I am, you can always count on a variety of jazz tunes to provide the bumper music for Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Very excited to introduce you all to my next guest on the live line this afternoon, Robin Rahm. Robin Rahm is the author of two acclaimed books and a chapbook. Her memoir, The Mercy Papers, was named a top 10 nonfiction book of the year by Entertainment Weekly, a notable book of the year by the New York Times, and a top 100 nonfiction book by the San Francisco Chronicle. Her collection of stories, The Mother Garden, called Whimsical and Affecting by the New York Times, was a finalist for the Penn USA Prize and the Northern California Independent Booksellers Book of the Year Award. Her stories have appeared in numerous national journals, including Tin House, Our Story, and Three Penny Review, as well as anthologies. She's written criticism for the New York Times Book Review and the San Francisco Chronicle Book Review, and the McDowell Colony has twice granted her fellowships. If you want to find out more about my guest, you can go to robinrahm, ROMM.com, or you can listen in, because here she is, Robin Rahm. Welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's great to have you here. And it must be so nice to reflect on all these different journals and organizations recognizing you for the excellence of your prose. Even Entertainment Weekly, I didn't know that they were paying attention to the best nonfiction books of the year, but you must have been pleased that they grabbed yours.
They sure do, and they even give them grades, A, B, and C, and I was lucky enough to get an A, which it actually feels like being graded when you see that in the news, in the magazine.
Yeah, definitely, and probably the sort of grades that you are used to earning, and so it's nice to keep up with that record. Also, some very nice things were said about you in terms of your book, Mercy Papers, in the New York Times Book Review, and I wanted to share this. And this is Leah Hager-Cohen says that not only are you a good writer, although your prose, both here and in The Mother Garden, her debut, your debut story collection, published in 2007, is so fresh and uncompromising, it can feel practically impertinent. Nor because of your wit, although you can be startlingly funny, particularly in the subject of a nonagenarian grandfather, and not even because of your fearless, scathing honesty, like a gauntlet thrown down on page after page. It's ultimately your anger that is so magnetic. And I guess if we're going to have anger, that's just what we want people to say about it, magnetic anger.
That's a good point.
So tell us a little bit more about your memoir, The Mercy Papers. What was your focus and your inspiration for this book?
Well, I was a fiction writer first before I became a memoirist, and I was working on The Mother Garden, my first collection of stories. And my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer actually when I was 19, and so It was about 9 years before I started the book that she was diagnosed, and she sought various treatments, and she never really went into a full remission. Maybe once she did, but she battled it and struggled for a long time. And when I was about halfway through writing The Mother Garden, just kind of a absurdist collection of stories, a little bit like Isaac Bashevis-Singer meets Amy Bender, for those people who are curious about that.
Sure.
I stopped being able to write fiction. I just couldn't do it because she became increasingly sick, my mother. And I had to go back to Oregon from California. I was living in Berkeley to be with her. And I really struggled with how stuck I felt. Like, I felt like I was taking this whole year to care for my mother, and I was in my 20s, and everybody else was getting on with their lives, and I was just sort of stuck in this world of death. And a friend of mine, actually a professor of mine, I was at San Francisco State in graduate school, said, well, why don't you just give yourself a break and stop writing fiction and just write what you see in the house? And I started. And because I'm trained as a fiction writer, I saw narrative everywhere. I saw possible stories. I saw character gesture and I heard dialogue, and so I just started writing all of this down, and those were the seeds of the Mercy Papers, though I had no idea it would become a memoir. It wasn't a journal, because it wasn't just my feelings, it was really what I saw, and it became this kind of exercise of making something out of the chaos that was the end of my mother's life, making something that felt controlled and accurate and something I could actually see. And much later, it became something that I could show to people, and even later, something that the world could comment on and see and use.
I'm sure it functioned for you as a kind of therapy, too, if you don't mind me psychoanalyzing you a little bit. And because what you said about control, I thought was very interesting, that as someone who's also lost a parent to cancer, I know that no matter the energy and will of the loved one who's suffering, you know, that there comes a time where every day becomes very important, because it's leading towards a last day, but also the fact that no child can kind of slow that decline necessarily.
Right.
And so just the opportunity to do something that you knew how to do, and to and really to do anything at all, I'm sure, gave you some, well, let you keep your mind busy, maybe gave you a little bit of peace of mind, gave you something to focus on, and gave you an opportunity to remember and celebrate your mom.
Yeah, all of that. And I think that most people who've gone through a caretaking experience can relate to being asked, how are you? How are you? By people far away.
Right.
And that impossible urge to answer, but you can't answer, because what are you supposed to say? I'm horrible. This is the worst thing. Everything just sounds wrong.
Right.
And so the writing actually became a way for me to at least answer the question myself, personally. You know, it was a personal kind of exploration of the answer. How was I? What was this world? And, you know, that became a book.
Yeah. So the dear friends who wanted to find out, a couple years later, they can purchase the book and discover just how you were doing and how you were wrestling with it.
Yeah.
Well, having attended a writer's conference recently, the San Francisco Writers' Conference, I know that it's very important for an author of a fiction or a nonfiction book to pay attention to her platform and to imagine additional and wider audiences who would be interested in whatever it is we're writing about, which may seem at times somewhat an egotistic affair when one's writing a memoir about oneself. But I'm wondering if you have used the occasion of writing this book and promoting the book to connect with other, communities of caretakers, and what sort of messages you've heard from them about the effect that it had on their own lives or imaginations.
The book has really, it's starting to have a life without me, which is amazing, and I get a lot of letters from people who have been going through a loss and who are just very grateful for the honesty and the fury in the book and the permission that it gives people to feel the same things and to have it articulated. I mean, I had one person say they were just going to buy the book from now on when asked how they were caring for the woman caring for her mother.
Right.
But I've also worked with the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, and I've gone to speak to aspiring rabbis a few times about becoming chaplains and what you can do in the face of grief, grieving congregants. And that's been very rewarding. I must say that I feel like that work, the fact that the Mercy Papers has made its way into the world of young rabbis, is just really amazing to me. And what we talk about when we talk, when I've gone twice, is the role of not knowing, you know, being able to be with someone who's grieving, who's losing someone, and not giving them like a prepackaged answer. This is what's going to happen when this person dies. This is how you should be feeling.
Right.
This is the road to healing or whatever, but to actually sit in the pain with them. And it's wonderful that they've had me to the seminary. I've also spoken with doctors, and some hospice providers have also read the book. The book's pretty fiercely antagonistic towards the hospice nurse that we had, and so I wasn't sure how the hospice community would respond, but actually many hospice providers have written to say that they're using the book for training so that they can provide better care to families, because they're often focused primarily on the person who's dying, and they can forget that there's a whole community of people around that person who are also suffering.
That's wonderful and entirely heartwarming. We were talking before about the powerlessness that many of us feel in the face of the death of a loved one. But here, as a someone who uses tools, words as your tools, this is where you can really share your superpower, and that is to represent emotional states accurately, and as an artist to notice patterns and responses that it turns out are doing a lot of good in the world for people who really need help, who need your help.
Well, I was so thrilled, actually, when the book came out to such warm reviews, not because, I mean, part of me was thrilled because the reviews were good, but part of me was deeply affected by the response in terms of, I felt so alone, and other people were saying, hey, wait, I felt so alone, and look, this is an important narrative, and we can all use it to feel less alone, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
And that was profoundly moving, and it made me question how alone I felt, actually. It made me sort of wonder about the role of reaching out when you are the person in grief, with writing or with talking or, you know, extending yourself in some way, because actually the world does come forward to meet you if you're honest.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And in an age of technology, that makes it that much easier to connect with people who may be spread across the nation or across the globe, but who are going through something very similar to you.
That's very true.
And to make that connection. To write a book and have a great number of people purchase it is the old-fashioned but welcome way. But now we can also jump on the appropriate, say, Facebook group to talk to others as well. Well, if you're just joining us, my guest this afternoon is Robin Rahm. She's the author of two acclaimed books. We've been talking mostly about The Mercy Papers, which is a memoir that was warmly welcomed by a great number of publications, including the New York Times and Entertainment Weekly. She's also written a book called On the Mother Garden, or excuse me, it's called The Mother Garden. And Gregory Cowles in the New York Times Book Review said that despite their confident, straightforward prose and their crystalline surface gloss, which recall Ann Beattie's early slice of life stories, Rahm's narratives, which Cowles might call a slice of death, turn out to revel in ambiguities and even a gentle magic. But Rahm is a close-up magician, more intimate and less instinctively fabulous, and most of her work leaves room for rational interpretation. I asked you if you would prepare a passage to share with folks at home, and I don't know if we decided you would choose something from The Mercy Papers or from The Mother Garden.
Well, I have the Mercy Papers in front of me, so let's stick with that, although I certainly could read something from the story. Then I'm changing my mind, which I often do. I was going to read you something that was more poetic, because this is indeed what you do. You have a poetry show.
Right.
But I'm thinking now, just because we talked so much about the content of the book, that I might just read the first couple of paragraphs to give people a taste of it.
Please do. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So this is how the book opens. Barb, our hospice nurse, has bluish teeth and frizzy black hair styled to look like a hunting cap. The skin around her eyes droops, and when you talk to her, she takes too long to respond. She wears loose cotton blouses with patterns of clocks or vines. The woman needs to be startled. In one of the many fantasies I've concocted over the last few weeks here, I own a mess of owls, and they wait, talons clutching the branch in their ornate cage. When Barb comes, when she looks past me to my mother, past my mother to that voice she listens to when she's not listening to any of us, I will set them free in her face. Barb comes every few days to clip my mother's socks so her swollen feet will fit, or to administer more morphine, more Percocet, more fentanyl. She's building a boat to sail my mother out. She has no interest in my mother's life, the thoughts she had, the cases she won, her family. Barb will build the boat of morphine and pillows, and then I will have no mother, and the days will be wordless and empty.
Oh, that building the boat is an amazing image.
Thank you.
Yeah, that in of itself is poetic, and perhaps not purposefully so, but it makes us think of if we're thinking mythologically of mm-hmm. who was it, Charon and the river Styx.
Yes, I've had that. People have said that.
Yeah.
It was accidental, but I'm glad that people are making the link.
As I'm sure they will continue to. You talked to earlier about how rabbis and hospice workers are using this to improve training and understanding when working with people who are dying or their loved ones and caregivers. But the book sounds like people who are interested in medicine, people who are interested in families and familial connections, people interested in loss,
mm-hmm.
Will find a lot there in the Mercy Papers to return to over and over again.
I hope so. Yeah, some people interested in memoir in general, I hope will also look at the book.
Excellent. Well, Robin, it's been a pleasure to meet you on the telephone. I've heard wonderful things about you from a mutual student of ours.
Yes.
And I want to thank you very much for coming on the program and especially for telling a little bit of the backstory of your widely acclaimed book, The Mercy Papers.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. We'll be right back. Hope you're enjoying a great afternoon. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, reminding you that tonight is Poetry Night at Bistro 33. John Bowe is going to be the guest. He's one of UC Davis's most popular faculty members. John Bowe's storytelling prowess, in fact, has been featured at festivals such as Picnic Day and also the California Storytelling Festival. On radio and on television, including ABC's 2020, at clubs such as the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley, as well as conferences, conventions, schools, and other venues. He's the author of a number of books, including Life Itself, Messiness is Next to Goddessness, and other essays. He's co-author of Your Joke is in the Email, Cyber Laughs from Mouse Potatoes. He's the editor of the journal Writing on the Edge, and he's the first winner of the Excellence in Teaching Award from the Academic Federation here at UC Davis. He will be performing ribald stories tonight at 8 o'clock at Bistro 33. Parental discretion is advised. Well, I've got a couple more actor, director, creative types who are eager to share with you their story. They're putting on a show tomorrow night that you may want to see. So enjoy some more of this jazz, and we'll be right back with a little bit more of this very theatrical edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Here's an important message, and that is that the ASUCD Book Exchange allows students to sell back their used textbooks and set their own prices for them. Usually students receive more money for their used textbooks than they would normally from other places such as bookstores or online. In addition, students may purchase books from the Book Exchange at lower prices than what bookstores usually offer. The exchange takes place in the first week of every academic quarter in the King Lounge on the second floor of the Memorial Union on the UC Davis campus. For more information, check out the website bookexchange.ucdavis.edu. A public service message from KDVS. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I spoke at the top of the hour about Filipinos and liberal arts and humanities and how there's this show going on tomorrow night, America is on the Stage 2010. I've got two of the driving creative forces behind this project here in the studio. Elizabeth Andalong and Leo Cristobal are down here. And they're going to tell us about the show. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
So I know a little bit about Leo already, Elizabeth, so I'm going to start with you. What's your major?
I'm a fifth-year communications and Spanish minor, I guess.
All right. And in terms of your own interest in liberal arts and humanities and theater, and so far as you all have put together some shows to share with people, what first drew you to FILA, Filipinos in Liberal Arts and Humanities?
It's funny, actually, before I became a communications major, I was a pre-med major, but for some reason I didn't really mesh well with the major, and I've always been a fan of AOTS, is what we call America is on the Stage,
right?
And Lee and I always wanted to do a script for it, but we were always so busy with things, so this year we sat down and finally participated in it, and it feels awesome.
Excellent. Great, good for you. And so what is your function? Obviously a playwright.
That's right.
Are you acting? Are you directing? What else are you doing?
So Leo and I actually co-wrote an original play.
Uh-huh.
And so we are co-scriptwriters, I guess, and co-directors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think I am actually acting in another one of the original plays, but I'm also opening up the show with a musical treat. So I think...
Excellent. And a musical treat, do we not want to give away any of the details, such as will you be singing, playing an instrument?
I will say all of the above. My friends will be performing, but it's probably best that I don't say it, so we'll save it for those to come.
Save it for the surprise. Well, good. Let me ask Leo before we introduce him to all of you. For people who are just joining us, what is America is on the Stage 2010? When does it take place, and how do we get there?
So America is on the Stage is essentially a showcase of creative talent. Mm-hmm. It consists of musical performances, scripts, plays, spoken word, and it's going to be taking place tomorrow. So that's Thursday, March 4th, and it'll be at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater, which is located behind the art building, sort of near the Arboretum. The performance or the showcase has been going on annually as a function of FILA. And yeah, I mean, that's...
What time does it start?
It's going to be starting... The doors are going to open at 5:30 p.m. and the show is going to start at 6 and it'll go all the way up till 10 o'clock.
Excellent.
And it's free.
It's a free show. And who should consider themselves invited to the show?
Anyone who has a vested interest in creative displays of the mind should... take it to attend this very, very epic performance or epic showcase of performances thrown by UC Davis students.
It's a really diverse showcase. There's going to be spoken word. There are going to be the plays. There are going to be a lot of musical performances acoustically as well as vocally. And so anyone who's interested in any of those things should really come and check it out, especially because after going through the tech rehearsals last night, I was amazed with the amount of talent that we have just present in our community.
Excellent.
And just as a note, FILA, as an organization, their very basic core mission as a student organization is to allow students to have an outlet to express themselves. So if you are interested in kind of being exposed to that sort of environment and just being able being around a lot of creative people, you should definitely come out and check out AOTS. Again, it's tomorrow night at... Doors open at 5:30 at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater, and the show starts at 6.
Show starts at 6, goes on until 10. Tickets are free.
Yes.
You can just walk right in.
Yeah.
Now, are you both graduating in spring?
We are.
Yes, we are.
And so as a couple of the natural leaders of this organization, and especially this particular representation of creativity, do you have confidence in the future leadership of the freshmen, sophomores, and juniors that you've worked with on this production?
I'd say definitely. There's no lack of creative juice in terms of the younger students who are involved with FILA or involved, you know, in the Filipino American community, but just in, you know, the creative arts community in general. I feel like it only gets better as the younger generations come and they get exposed to our creative, you know, ideas, and which kind of builds on their own. And there's definitely no lack of creative talent. So
I completely agree. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Excellent. And I bet you all enjoyed working on this play together.
Yes.
I would have to say it was the most trying, challenging, and I don't think I've laughed that hard
yeah.
in my entire life.
Our play specifically is probably one of the more lighthearted performances that you're going to see. They're all very powerful, and they all have very strong messages. But ours combines all that with a very interesting comedic twist.
Excellent. And did I hear off mic that yours will be airing around 8:30?
Yes, that's correct. Ours will approximately around 8:30, 8:35, and each play is given about 20 to 25 minutes. So
they're all just one act plays. So
yes,
excellent. So if you come and for some reason you don't see what you like, just wait a few minutes. You'll see something else that you like. All right, great. And Elizabeth, you'll also be starting off the show at around 6 o'clock with some music.
That's correct.
Excellent. Well, Elizabeth Andalong, thanks very much for coming.
Thank you.
Leo Cristobal, very well done.
Thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you all tomorrow evening at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater, starting at 6 o'clock. And is there some sort of website we should send people to?
Yes, the website is fila.org. So that's FILAH.org. And that has the website for the organization that's throwing it.
Excellent. Thanks very much to both of you for coming on the radio show.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you, Dr. Andy.
Absolutely. Well, folks, it's after 6, and so we've come to the end of another one of our editions of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I'd like to thank Leo and Liz, who we just heard from, and remind you all that that show starts tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater. It's called America is on the Stage 2010. People will be talking about that on Friday, and you don't want to be left out of those conversations. Robin Rahm was my guest at half past the hour, And her memoir that we talked about is The Mercy Papers, which has been celebrated by all sorts of journals, including the New York Times. Her collection of short stories is The Mother Garden. And I've heard great things about her as a teacher as well as an author, and so I'm glad that she could join me. And then also joining me earlier was Katya Komatskaya, who I didn't want to embarrass her, but she's really a big deal. It's a big deal that she's come to campus from Russia to be our Granada artist in residence. And she did it in part to share with all of us her love of Chekhov. And she brought with her two very established creative professionals who nevertheless talked about how much they continue to learn from her. So this is a big deal, and I'm certainly looking forward to The Seagull. It starts a week from tonight, March 10th, on the UC Davis campus. And, of course, tonight, John Bowe. This show will sell out, so if you're going to hope to see John Bowe perform his off-color humorous stories, a storyteller who's been seen on 2020 as well as in many classrooms here at UC Davis, then come early. The show starts at 8. I imagine most of the seats may be gone by 7:30 or 7:45 tonight at Bistro 33, 226 F Street, here in the city of Davis. Stick around for some great music, a radio show called Time to Get Away, and I'll see you next week for another edition of everybody's favorite poetry and technology program. This has been Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. See you next week.